Thanks, Eric. I want to talk to you today about unconditional. When we hear the word unconditional, we think of unconditional love. I hope you don't mind if I take a little time today to get away from the prophecy we've been talking about lately. I think that's been very important, but I think that sometimes if we only hear prophecy, it numbs us to the reality of its urgency. There are certain people that only preach prophecy, and you see them on television, you think, well, I know what he's talking about, and, you know, it doesn't really grab us like it should. But I want to take a step today and talk about something else, and I think you'll see how it relates to a very urgent issue in our day. Unconditional. We think about unconditional as meaning love, unconditional love for someone. Think about somebody that you love unconditionally. It's hard. When we think about it, we think about uncomfortable love, love that's not always easy. We think about love that is such that many times we make excuses for the people who hurt us, because we love them unconditionally. They hurt us, and we think, well, I'm not going to hold that against them, or we make excuses. It doesn't have to be people. It can be things you love unconditionally. Yesterday, I had a rare pleasure and privilege. A guy who owns a radio station that I do some work with called me and said, I need somebody to work the sidelines for the Catawba College football game on Saturday. I said, okay, buddy, I'll do that for you. And so I'm standing on the sidelines with the microphone. Don't ever do that if you like football, because you find out that it's an illusion. You know, I'll be honest, after that football game yesterday, I got in the car and I told Crystal and Carrie, I said, I don't ever want Carrie to go to Catawba College. And I was kidding, because Carrie does, that's one of her colleges that she's looking at. But I was so angry because I saw the humanity of the football team. Okay, that's, you know, and I say this illustration to make a point. If I love college football so much, I'll excuse it. You know, I really will. I mean, there's nothing that they can do to make me not love it, you see. And what happens is a lot of times we think about people when we think about unconditional love and how there's nothing that this person can do to me to keep me from loving them. But there's also things that we can love that much too. Think about it. Because in our world, a lot of things take priority over God. And we don't realize it because we justify it. We say, well, you know, I don't really love it over God. I mean, I don't spend more time doing it. And then we catch ourselves. And it's funny how we get into politics or we get into sporting events and athletics, and you know, somebody comes up to you and says, I don't know how you can care so much about that. And you say, yeah, but, you know, I like it because this person's good, or I like it because I believe in this, or whatever. And we justify those things, and there's nothing that can turn us off if we're not careful. And yesterday, I had to interview the coach for Catawba at halftime, and I was pulling for Catawba, man. I'm working for the radio station there that pulls for Catawba. You know, I'm standing there. He was a jerk. He was an absolute jerk. I'm going to tell you right now, at the end of halftime, I didn't care if they lost 50 to nothing. And they did just about. I didn't care. I couldn't care less. Now, I didn't care a lot when I got there, but if I was a diehard Catawba fan, as there were some behind me and as there were some on the radio, I'm sure they could have justified it.
They could say, well, you know, it's just his intensity. He's just so involved in the game, and what do you expect at halftime? Whatever.
Because they want to love it unconditionally. And I'm just using football as an illustration. You can love anything unconditionally. And you get blinded to the reality that you're loving something more than you're loving God. Because you don't even give God that break. When things don't work out exactly the way you think it should have, you've been praying about it and He didn't heal when you thought He should heal, or He didn't do what you thought He should do, all of a sudden you're mad at God. It's amazing how we'll give somebody else a break and we don't want to give Him one. And yet we claim we love Him unconditionally. I'll show you three people I love unconditionally. Look at there. I love them unconditionally. I chose this picture for a reason. We're at the Hurricanes game. That's not why I chose that particularly. You can tell Carrie's ready for the Hurricanes game. She's got her book right here. She's ready to read while the game goes on. If it's a baseball game, Hope brings a big novel too, you know, so they don't. But anyway, we're there. We're ready for the game. Now, I want you to notice that attractive hair color on Hope there. That's kind of the late orange look after it was the other color. Show us the next slide, please. Now, that was Halloween, Hope's freshman year, and she would probably kill me if she knew that I showed you this picture, but that was the best one I could really grasp the situation of the hair color that Hope surprised us with when we took her out to eat that week. Such a lovely color found in nature. It really, even at that, doesn't do it justice because it was the brightest pink, and she comes out there, it was really red for about, I don't know, a week, and then it became pink, and it was kind of that orange, sickly, you know. And you go and you pick up your child from college and you are paying money to put her in this situation. And she comes out and she gets in the car and I honestly expects you to like it. You know, I mean, I remember picking her up and it was all we could do just to maintain conversation. And we went to Stamey's Barbecue, you know. And there was two guys who were sitting in the booth behind Hope, and she didn't even see them. And they both gave it the, yeah. And I'm thinking, Hope, if you just knew how ridiculous that looked, you know. But anyway, like she's dressed up like a fairy for Halloween. I didn't want you to think that she walks around like that all the time either. But I want to tell you something about Hope, and she's not here, and she can't defend herself, so I want to be fair. When your child goes to college, and even before that, you know how Bill Cosby talks about brain damage? I mean, they are bombarded with stuff even before. And you sit there, I mean, honestly, she couldn't wait to dye her hair that color because it was just October of her freshman year. She hadn't been there long. And she thought, you know, this would be her chance to be her own person, I guess. And so she does this, and of course we take her out to Stamey's and we try to talk to her about college. When all you can do is think, Hope, do you honestly think that's pretty? You know, do you honestly expect your mother and I to not say, what were you thinking? You know. But you do, you sit there and you know, not only is it physical, but it's philosophical. Differences, changes. You know, it's not good enough that Dad says it's this way anymore. Yeah. When the kids were little, you could make decisions for them. Yeah. You could even make decisions like, no, they don't eat that, they eat this. No, they don't like that, they like this. You could do things like that. But when they get to be their own person, you can't do that anymore. And there's nothing more frustrating as a parent than knowing something that the Lord has taught you. And that not being good enough anymore because you've believed it and you expect your child to believe it because of your integrity. And that child looks at you and they say, you know what? You believe that, but I don't know that I do anymore. That's tough. And I'm looking at parents and grandparents and you know exactly where I'm coming from. And it hurts. It hurts, doesn't it? Because you're so afraid. The most important thing on this side of eternity is that we all be in heaven together. That's all that matters. Let's be real. You want as many people as you can to be in heaven, and you definitely want your family there. And there's nothing more important than that. You would do anything to try to convince that person that that's the most important thing to you. And of course, there's something about these years, they just got to go through it. They just got to test the waters. They just got to try it. And they got to make your God their God. And it takes time. Hope is a wonderful girl. smart, got the best sense of humor. You'd never know it because she's so quiet. But there are times when, you know, I look at her and I think, Hope, where is that coming from? Where did you think that? And why won't you just trust me anymore? Why does it have to be this way? And it's frustrating because it takes time. It takes an investment. But despite that, I won't stop loving her. I got through the pink hair stage. I've gotten through some of the bizarre philosophy stages. I've heard them, I didn't like them, and I didn't agree with them. But she knows I still love her. And that's worth a lot. Because one day she's going to find out that these things that she thinks care about her don't care about her as much as I do. And it's that way for football, leisure, everything. You know, it's amazing to me how much we care about stuff that doesn't give a flip about us. But I love that girl so much, I'd die for her. Unconditionally. No matter what bizarre color her hair is next week, I will love her the same. Look at another one that I love. I wanted to put another picture up there when Carrie was sick. A lot of you don't know this about Carrie, and I asked if I could share some things. And it may be a little emotional for her, so excuse her if this happens to bother her. In November of Carrie's eighth grade year, Crystal and I were shopping, Christmas shopping. And we got a phone call, and they paged us. Or actually, Crystal was somewhere else in the store, and she had me paged. We came to the front, and it was the secretary at the middle school, and they said, Mr. Lohman, Carrie's arm is going around in circles, and she cannot stop it. I said, what? What do you mean? They said, and they told us again. So I asked if I could speak to Carrie, and we were driving back to the middle school, and she was frightened, obviously. We were frightened. And we got there, and we picked her up, and sure enough, that was going on. Couldn't stop it, right? We took her to the hospital, Concord. They had two pediatric neurologists on staff. They looked at Carrie. They looked at us. They didn't know. So they did all kind of scans on Carrie, brain scans. We're thinking maybe it's a brain tumor. Maybe it's something like that. Wasn't. Everything comes back normal. They started asking us questions like, would Carrie fake this? And we said, if she was faking it, she would have come clean about the time you start putting IVs in her. Because Carrie's got real little veins, and it's like a pincushion, man. I mean, and they can't find them. I said, there ain't no way that kid would keep doing that. But we noticed after a while, or I noticed, that she would spin, and then she would do something with this arm, and it would stop. And I said, do that again, Carrie. Move this hand. And sure enough, she'd be going like this, and then she'd lift that hand, it would stop. So she got to where she could manipulate it by just moving a few fingers, and this hand would stop. It wasn't long after that her legs started going around in circles. And we're thinking, what in the world? So I'm calling neurologists, and I'm substituting some of this. We tried medications. We didn't know if it was seizures. We didn't know if it was... We've gone everything from this disease called PANDAS, which they thought was related to strep, you wouldn't believe. We've seen almost 20 different doctors, and no one's really sure yet what happened to Carrie. She's been on medication like you wouldn't believe. She's had to have steroid injections. She's had to have something called IVIG, where they took blood from seven other donors to take over her immune system, because they thought if they could clean out her immune system and replace it with other people's immune systems, it might stop her from ticking. At one time, Carrie had both arms and both legs going around in circles at the same time. She was walking to school with her fingers twisted like that and on her toes so she wouldn't be ticking all the time in class. The worst thing was when she couldn't breathe. She went one day to school and all of a sudden they called us. They said, Carrie can't breathe. We said, what do you mean she can't breathe? She couldn't breathe for about a minute at a time, and then she could breathe for 20 seconds. And then she would stop breathing for a minute. We called the ambulance. We take her to the hospital. We don't know. They don't know. There's no answers. It's frustrating. Every once in a while, she'll tick again. We don't know why. But it'll happen. So it's much rarer. And you look at Carrie and she's beautiful. And you know what? You see her and you think, there's nothing wrong with that kid. And then you see her, you know, we've seen her and she's looked like she was having a Tourette's attack. She can't talk. She can't breathe. Frightening. Terrifying. You want to know something? I couldn't love her any more than I do right now. Crazy about that girl. And I wouldn't care. I don't like it that she's sick. I hate it. I wish it was me. You know, that's the way. That's what we say. You know, I wish it was me. I have prayed to God to heal my daughter. I have taken her to doctors. I've prayed just like you have prayed, you know, for other people in your life. Please, God, heal them. Please, God, restore their minds. Please, God, do something. Please, please, please. But I want you to know that in the worst days, I never stopped loving that girl. Never. It never entered my mind. I'm crazy about that kid. I'm so proud of her. I didn't choose it. I don't like it that she's sick. She doesn't either. But it doesn't change the way I feel about her because I love her unconditionally, without measure. Carrie was high maintenance at times. I mean, there are times, you know, you're thinking, not again. Oh, my gosh, what is it now? Crystal and I have sat at home for most of her high school life and hoped the phone didn't ring. Because let me tell you, if you call me during the day, we look like Clawed Cat, you know, on the Warner Brothers cartoon. The little dog sneaks up behind him and goes, bah, 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 and the cat goes straight up, you know. Every time the phone rings at our house, that's exactly the way Crystal and I look, you know. And we go and we look at the caller ID, and if it says East Rowland High School, we look at one another and go, oh, no, what is it? You know, still goes on occasionally. But like I said, she's much better. And I asked if I could share some of this stuff, and I hope I didn't bother you with anything I said. High maintenance, yes. But let me tell you something else. You know, when I look at God and I look at His unconditional love for us, He loves us in the midst of rebellious spirits like Hope has sometimes. And even Carrie in high school, there's some things she'll come home with, and I think, Carrie, where is that coming from? I don't understand. And you know what? He loves us despite how burdensome we might seem to others, how high maintenance we might be to Him. You know, it's sad when it seems like we always have to come back and ask forgiveness because we can't get over our addiction. We can't get over our sin. And we come back and say, Lord, I'm going to start again and I'm going to try. You know, Carrie and I and her mother, we keep track of how many days she goes without having a tick or any regression. And that's the way we are with God sometimes. We say, Lord, I intended to do better this time and I'm sorry I failed. You know what? God still loves us back in. Unconditionally, we can come to Him with our problem, with our high-maintenance ways. There's one other person I love unconditionally. Isn't that a good picture? You know what? She hates that picture. I said, babe, that's a great picture. I like the way her tongue's touching her teeth. Yeah. Crystal and I don't always agree on everything. One of the greatest compliments that we ever got about our marriage was a senior lady at our last church. She said, I can't imagine one without the other. Can't imagine one without the other. Man, I love that. And I love that lady. We don't always get along. You know, sometimes I don't wear socks. We have disagreements. We have times when, remember, this week we had one, and we didn't speak to one another for a while. You don't remember that? I do. You wouldn't speak to me. But it was just a stupid little thing that you were wrong about. I bet I won't get any lunch today, right? No. But let me tell you something that I read this week in Reader's Digest. It was fantastic. It was talking about prenuptial agreements. And it talked about some of the issues that are actually in prenuptial agreements. Now, I'm making this PG. One of them was sexual requirements. One partner required sex 3 times a week, and that was part of the prenuptial agreement. You like that? That's pretty wild. The other ones, though, that caught my eye that I liked was one of them was that the mother-in-law could not go on vacation overnight. If they could go with them anywhere, that they drove, but they could not stay overnight with them if they went on vacation. That was one of the prenups. Some of y'all are nodding your head, man, I should have looked in that. There was another one that said if the partner gained 35 pounds. How about that? These were real things in prenuptial agreements. Sex requirements, weight requirements, mother-in-law requirements. But I want to share something with you about the way I feel about Crystal. I love Crystal hopelessly. Hopelessly. There's nothing she can do that would change the way I feel about her. And it has nothing to do with her. It has everything to do with the way I feel about her. She can't do anything to make me love her less. And when I think about the Lord, you know there's nothing you can do to make Him love you less? Nothing. Because it's not just reliant upon you. It's reliant upon how He feels about you. You can't change that. You can try to get people not to love you, but if they're convinced they're going to love you, there's nothing you can do about it. And there's nothing that lady can do about it. There's nothing the little girl beside of her can do about it. I love them unconditionally. They can't stop me from loving them that way. And that's great news today because we know that God feels that way about us. Look at the next slide. Now, my children have broken my heart before. You say, oh, it just breaks your heart when they get older. Yeah, it breaks your heart. It does. It's pitiful. You know, they went to the prom and stuff. You know, oh, you're so beautiful. You know, that's sad. But they've also broken my heart in the way that they've spoken to me. You know, they've said things they shouldn't have said to me. They've broken my heart in lies they've told me. Doesn't happen often. But it does happen. They get caught, you know. And say, why would you do that? They've broken my heart when they haven't come to me and they've tried to fix things without me knowing about it. If you're a parent, your children have broken your heart. Just as we've broken God's heart. Think of the times that you haven't been up front with God. Think of the times that His heart truly has been broken because of His great love for us. Because the thing that's amazing to me is how much I love my wife and my children. It's almost incomprehensible to me that God can love me more than that. Because I know how much I love them. And when some preacher tells me He loves me more, I just can't imagine that. Think about how many times, though, that I've let Him down, and yet He still loves me the same. My bride could break my heart. But I wouldn't stop loving her. As I've never stopped loving my children, I got to tell you how hopeless I am. Even if my wife betrayed me with another man, I would still love her. You say, you're an idiot. No, I can't help it. I cannot help it. And you know how I know that? Because I have committed adultery so many times against the Lord and He still loves me. I have put things ahead of Him. I have not been faithful to Him at times. I have not responded in the way I should have responded to the Lord. And He still loves me. Think about how many times we have been guilty of adultery. That's what God was talking to the children of Israel about in the Old Testament. How many times they went to other gods instead of Him. I mean, that's His specialty. That's His specific love for these people. I want to be your God. I want to be your provider. I want to be the essence of who you call on in your time of need. And you have gone to someone else. You know, the thing that's so difficult about adultery is the intimate betrayal. You know, the betrayal of intimacy. Crystal and I share something no one else knows about. And if that was ever betrayed, that's... You know, that people say, that's just unforgivable. And I think it's really the reason why that is the one out when it comes to divorce. Because, by biblical standards, is because that intimacy is so sacred to God. Why? Because He wants to be so intimate with you. He wants nothing to be more important to you than your relationship with Him. And He wants you to share it in such a way that no one else can understand how close you are together. I mean, I have a relationship with God, and Crystal has a relationship with God, and Carrie has a relationship with God, and none of them are the same. He wants it to be that relationship that's so peculiar that we share things in an intimate way that we can't even share with our closest friend, our closest family member. He wants that kind of intimacy. And I'll guarantee you, if anybody's betrayed anybody in an adulterous relationship, it's been us betraying him. What faithfulness. Let me look at the next one. We hear, I prayed, but God didn't answer. God didn't act the way that I thought He should, or when I thought He should. He let me down, so I'm walking away. That's conditional love towards God, because our love is conditional upon what He does for us or how He responds to our prayer. I want to ask you today, isn't it a good thing that His love isn't conditional to what we do to Him, to how we feel about Him? Isn't it a good thing that His love isn't reliant upon how we treat Him, how we serve Him, how we do for Him, how we think of Him, how we worship Him? Isn't it a good thing that His love is unconditional? And so many times we hold God to conditions. I'll be His if. I'll be His when. I'll be His as long as. I'll be committed to Him when this happens. You say, no, I love God unconditionally. I'm not like that. I want you to look at a few pictures. I want you to look at me for just a second. Look at that guy right there. No, go back there. Look at that guy right there. You believe that's me? That was our honeymoon. 21 years ago this month. I had hair. You're exactly right. I was a good-looking guy. I mean, you know, look at that picture. Is it any wonder that Crystal fell in love with me? Look at that. And then look at the next slide again. Look what I got out of that relationship, you know? That's what I got. Now look at the next picture. There we are again. I think I just got rid of that suit a little while ago. I mean, you know, I'm not a bad-looking guy. Now, I showed you what I got, because that picture was taken of Crystal just a few months ago, that other picture of Crystal. Now, let's look at what Crystal got. Now, I'm posed for that picture. I'm not really screaming or anything like that. I'm doing it. Yeah, right. Yeah. I want to tell you something. In 1994, 2 years after Crystal and I got married, I weighed 198 pounds. My dad said, why don't you just gain two more, Mark, and say you can weigh 200, you know. And I had gained over 20 pounds. The reason I did that was because Crystal, this is what I say, because Crystal got sick every time when she was pregnant, and so she had to eat in order to maintain weight because her stomach would get uneasy and she'd throw up a lot. So I said, well, honey, she said, but I feel bad. I'm eating all this food. I said, well, I'll eat, you know, I'll have a Big Mac with you or whatever. So I was almost to 200 pounds, and there I was, 5'8". I got to tell you, it was not muscle. Then in 1995, at Easter, we were at Disney World, packing the car, and a bungee cord came back, hit me in the eye. That's why I look like I got a cyborg eye in my right eye, because it tore my retina, and I had to have some surgery on that, and then I had to have surgery again because I got a cataract, so I got this funny-looking eye. Then in fall of 1998, we went to a Taco Bell in Graham. I was pastoring. Actually, no, it was fall of 97, excuse me. No, when it was fall of 98. And I was ordering, and you know how they have like remote cameras, you know, that show areas of the... And then they showed this picture of somebody ordering, and they were in a black jacket, and they were... I thought, man, that guy's really losing his hair. It dawned on me. It was me, you know. So, my gosh, I went back and, you know, then, oh, no, what am I going to do? I'm losing my hair. So, I was just going to tell you, I gained a lot of weight. I lost my eye. It looks funny. I went bald in 98. In spring of 2005, I had a heart valve replacement. I got a big old scar down the middle of my chest. And you know what? Despite all of that, Crystal still loves me. It wasn't just physical. She still loves me. And that's just the physical aspect. I'm not talking about all the problems with me as far as a psychological and all those issues. But Crystal still loves me. She's not disappointed. She's not ashamed. She loves all of me. Show that next. Like he does. He loves me. Just the way I am. Even when I question him. Y'all are cutting up now. Stop. Even when I question him. Even when I doubt him. Even when I betray him. Even because I'm imperfect. He still loves me. I've heard a lot about the reasons people leave church. Why people don't come to church. What's wrong with the church? A lot of times it's because of unrealized expectations. They expect the pastor to be a certain way or a lay person to be a certain way. They hold things against them. This is about unconditional love today. You say, I love God unconditionally. I love Jesus unconditionally. Really? That means you love everything about Him. Everything. Because like I said, I love everything about my wife. I love everything about my child. They love everything about me. It's not perfect, but we love everything about each other. If I love everything about Jesus Christ, then I have to love His body. The next slide, please. His body. If I love everything about Jesus, I have to love His body. Look with me at 1 Corinthians 12. Paul is writing, and I want you to see what he says. He says, now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it. Each one of you is a part of the body of Christ. When I think about being the body of Christ, it's not like signing up to be in the country club. You know, we become members of things. I was at Catawba yesterday, and there's a bunch of Chiefs Club people. And they get to go to a certain place and eat lunch and finger foods and stuff before the football game. They've paid money. They get perks. Sometimes I think we think of membership. And what is it? Membership has its privileges, right? Well, see, when we became the body of Christ, we got privileges in eternity, true. But it's not the same membership. When we decided to be part of the body of Christ, that meant we were going to be used to spread the gospel. We're not in it for the perks. We're in it for the purpose. Look at that next passage. No, go back. There, verse 25, there at the bottom. So that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. I want to just take a second and expand on that. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. When I read that verse years ago, I used to always think that meant that if you're hurting, I should pray for you. If you're having pain, then I should care for you. I should suffer with you. And I think that there is that implication in that verse. We should hurt for one another. We should cry. We should weep for one another. But I think it goes much farther than that. Because, see, if one part suffers, it's kind of like building something and having that little part left. And you think, what difference can that little part make? And you toss it aside because it's a big thing you built. And you think, that certainly can't make any difference. And after a while, when this starts to run, and it's not exactly running right, you call someone and you say, I don't know what the problem is. And you know what that specialist says? It says, did you have a little? And you say, yeah, but I threw it away because I didn't think it was that important. See, if we're going to be the body of Christ, it's mandatory. It's not a suggestion. It's mandatory that we proceed with every part that we need to influence our community for Jesus. And some of us, I think, don't feel as though we are truly part of the body. And in order to feel a part of the body, I think it's important that we look within and see if there's a little something that we need to do to make our church more effective. I think about our children. And I think about how important it is. Because I got to be honest with you folks, unless your kids are going to a private school, I don't know where in the world you think they're hearing the Bible. They ain't hearing it nowhere. They hear it at church. Sometimes I think that I pray so hard for us to grow as a church. Sometimes I think we can't grow yet because we're not set up to grow. We're not ready to grow. We have to have hearts that are ready to serve. We have to have hearts that are ready to care about the smallest details. Because if a new family came in and they had, I don't know, let's say three new families show up and all of them got little kids, we need things for those kids. Let's say people come in and they want to know the Lord and they want to feel welcome at a church and they're outsiders, you know. Are we people that are quick to them, to welcome them, to invite them, to share with them, to spend time with them, to invest time in them? Only if we love the body unconditionally. Because if you love the body unconditionally, no matter how many times it's failed you, no matter how many times you've had hard feelings towards someone in the body, if you love it unconditionally, you forgive them. And I'm not talking about specifics here. I don't know if we have any problems in our church. I don't think we do. But I think in order to go further, we're going to have a spirit of unconditional love for one another. Because it's a beautiful thing. And I'm going to tell you about it in just a second. I want you to look at this next passage. You say, well, what does that love mean? And a lot of us know what 1 Corinthians 13 says. You probably had it read at your wedding. 1 Corinthians 13. Now I want you to think for just a second. I want you to put yourself in the position of these phrases and ask yourself if that's the way you feel about the church. Love is patient. Are you patient with the church, with the people in the church? Yeah, I got to be honest with you. We've been here 2.5 years now, and I thought we'd be busting the doors out. I really did. I thought we would be growing like hands over fist. I truly did. And I've had to learn to be patient. It takes time. Love takes time to develop for one another. We have to be patient. Not going to happen overnight. Love is kind. Are you kind to people in the church? Or do you just say whatever you want to? You'd be amazed. Not this church so much, but boy, I tell you what. And Forbes, I know you can testify to it. It's amazing what people say to preachers sometimes. You're like, my gosh, would you say that to somebody you worked with? My God, I can't believe you said that. Are you kind? I got to tell you, the coach at Catawba ain't kind. He ain't kind. And let me tell you this is funny. Yesterday, they actually had an internet feed. So everything that we said on the radio was on TV, and they had cameras. And so I think somebody got to him at halftime because the post-game interview, he was a whole lot nicer. But anyhow, love is kind. It does not envy. It does not envy. You know what people fight about in the church sometimes has to do with envy? I'm envious because this person gets more attention. This person sings more. This person... It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. Look at that next one. It is not self-seeking. Are you part of the church? You know that Kennedy's old speech, ask not what the country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country, or spin that around. Is that your philosophy about the church? Ask what the church can do for you and not what you can do for the church? Love unconditionally for the church means it's not about you. It's about what you can do for the church, what you can do for the gospel. It's not easily angered. You get angry at people in the church. I'm so angry, I don't know why they do. Give each other a break. My gosh, we give people a break all the time. It's astounding to me how many times. The district attorney in Rowan County, they give you breaks like you wouldn't believe. It's amazing how many times the cops will come and they'll swear out warrants and they'll say, well, they're just going to bump it down to a misdemeanor or throw that out. Because they know the DA gives them breaks. And I think, you know what? The DA is practicing more Christian love than most Christians. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. It doesn't delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres, and it never fails. Unconditional love. It rejoices with the truth. And this is the last thing I want to say. It's the reason that I preach this sermon today. I think I got one more slide. Do I have one more slide? Or is that it? Is that the last one? Oh, that's it. Okay, good. All right. If we love the body unconditionally, and we look at that passage of Scripture about what love is, you know what? All of a sudden, we don't have to live under Satan's handiwork. In other words, we don't have to worry about offending one another, because we'll give one another the benefit of the doubt. We'll love one another. And as a pastor, you know what? I can preach the truth. As it said, love rejoices in the truth. I can preach the truth, and you don't have to come to me and say, well, preacher, I know what you're saying, but I thought you were a little bit, you know, you don't have to do that. Because, see, if we love one another, you're going to forgive me of my shortcomings. I'm going to forgive you of your shortcomings. We're going to come before the Lord, and we're going to ask Him to forgive us for our shortcomings together. And you know what? I can be truthful, and you can be truthful, and we're going to love, and we're going to respect one another. We don't have to be afraid of offending each other. We can be honest with each other. We can have integrity towards one another. It's a beautiful thing when we love each other. There's real integrity there. There's real sincerity from the pulpit, from the people. You know, it's wonderful, because then I can trust you to say good things about the church, and you can trust me to say good things about our people. It's a wonderful relationship. It's sincere. It's not just, you know, blowing out just a bunch of bull to try to make us look good in front of the people who don't even come. When they come into this church, they'll say, you know what? They really love one another. They're sincere. That pastor cares about them, and they care about their pastor. They have a wonderful pastoral staff, and you know what? The staff loves one another. They're not in competition. They're trying to help one another. The board gets along. It's a beautiful thing, because they love each other. And you know what? That church is going further than any of the churches around. Why? Because there's less hypocrisy. There's strength, because we are a unit. There's no pretense. There's no shame. There's no record of wrongs. There's a willingness to serve one another. And there's an anxiousness to bring more into the family, because we love what we've got. Isn't that beautiful? Do you feel that way about Christ's body? If you love God unconditionally, you have to. There's times when I get home at 7 o'clock in the morning, after I have sat and heard stories about atrocities and been in the company of drunken people and people who have beaten their wives and children and molested them, and I come home and I see Crystal, and then I see Carrie, and I think, there's nowhere in the world I'd rather be than where I am right now. There are times when I've worked several days in a row. There are times when I've done football games. There are times I've done the radio ministry. There are times I've done, you know, been busy, been at class. And I'll come home and I'll just hit the sofa and I'll just tell Crystal, I'm so glad I'm home. Because there doesn't have to be any pretense anymore. They know how I feel about them, and I know how they feel about me. How do you feel when you come into the church? Do you say, you know what, there's nowhere I'd because I don't have to have any pretense. These people know me and they accept me as I am. And I know that I accept them as they are too. Oh, man. And there's nowhere I'd rather be than right here with God's people. That doesn't exist yet here. We're close. But you know why I know it doesn't exist here? Because there must be a whole lot of other places you like going more than coming. Would you stand with me?